Well, welcome to Two Peas in a Podcast with Michelle and
Trevor.
In a time of interesting times, isn't it, Trevor? Well, interesting times.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. It's, you know, first of all, we have bushfires that have got heat beyond belief, and now we've got a global pandemic. I can't even say it.
So no, he's so shocked. And I just want you to all know, Trevor's really old. So if he hasn't seen this in his lifetime, we're all in trouble. But in amongst it all, we're here to offer hope, and we're actually here to offer some really practical advice about planting. Today we're going to be talking about peas and beans, and then we are going to be having a chat about the coronavirus, or what's it called? COVID-19, because it is unavoidable. But we're actually really wanting people to feel that be positiveness, don't we, Trevor?
Well, people are actually suggesting to us that gardening's a thing to be doing, and you just said they've run out of seedlings in certain places, so people are growing their own, which is almost like this terrible occurrence has had a good side effect, you know. So for those out there,
Trevor and I like to dance in the storm, don't we, Trevor? We find a rainbow in the storm.
Well, I mean, I would consider myself frugal at any rate. I mean, I think I'm ridiculous when it comes to spending money. I'm probably something more than frugal. But it is interesting that people do consider the garden is a way out of here, because in the long term, we might run out of food. Well, I don't know, but I can reiterate what you can plant right now.
You can, and plant. And because you know what I think is really important, Trevor, is, and we're going to get on to peas and beans, Trevor's favourite topic.
Yep.
But I think what's really important is that the psychology around the food hoarding is the fear of running out.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas gardeners don't have the fear of running out, because we actually know that, for example, I picked, it's exciting for me, 6 green apples.
Yep, beautiful.
I had a beautiful bit of cheese in the fridge.
Yep.
I sliced 2 of the apples up, sliced up a bit of the cheese. I actually sat there with a glass of red and had green, I've always got a glass of red, green apple and cheese. And so you don't feel that fear of losing the food isn't there, because I think, well, you know what, I've got my grapes, I've got my apples. Plant beans and peas, because it's so important to not feel like you might run out of food.
Yeah, well, I'm also a brewer, and I have got a legal still, so people are also talking about alcohol, methanol and ethanol being the best form of cleansing too. So,
and I am happy to put that to the test, Trevor. Trevor and I, when we finish this podcast with Nita, are going to do an experiment on whether alcohol will help us cleanse ourselves.
Right. Well, anyway, I better tell you, if you want to do some gardening, what you can plant now in March, it's getting on towards the end of March, is brassicas. That's the cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts and cabbage. Onions, peas and broad beans, spinach, beetroot, carrot, parsnip, celery, fennel, strawberries and other berries, asparagus, rhubarb, globe artichoke, fruit trees and natives. So now is probably the best time to plant all of those things. So don't do half measures. Get out there and get stuck into it. We've told you that really your first call is to plant herbs, because both of us agree that they're expensive in the supermarket and they're nowhere near good enough, and they're always being thrown away because you buy them and you can't use them all. It's far better to have one plant of oregano or oregano, one plant of marjoram, one plant of parsley, one plant of thyme, one of basil, and just build up. There's also this coriander and the dill. Build them all up and just have them sitting there. That's the first point of call. The second point of call, sorry, Michelle, but the second point of call is to fertilise your soil well and have potatoes. We've given you a lesson on potatoes as well, because those rich soils for the gross feeders, there's not that many gross feeders, but cauliflower is one, potatoes is one, tomatoes is one. So they are very important crops. They take a lot, but once the crop is finished, you can then plant peas and beans in that same soil without fertilising, because the big advantage of peas and beans is that they can follow any crop. That they're like you, Michelle. They're good companions to everybody.
Oh, Trevor!
And that's basically because they do fix nitrogen in the soil, so they feed the other plants.
So and even if you don't want to eat them, plant them. Which, see how Trevor is now speechless at the thought of not eating them. But people are really anti-broad beans, but I always think I love broad beans. They used to be. Yeah, I used to be until, but now I love broad beans.
A lot of people changed over, yeah.
Plant them anyway, even if you're just planting them as a grain crop, your broad beans. But, yeah, sorry, Trevor, I've put him off track at the thought of not eating beans.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's true, actually, and that's not off track because later on we're going to be talking about reclaiming land, because some people are saying this coronavirus is due to the fact that a third of the earth has been turned into desert by poor agricultural practices, and that, I think, is true. Well, one of the main weapons in turning it back into fertile soil is something that's called green manure and cover crop. Now, both of those are just terms for peas and beans, really, because they do both things. The desert is mainly caused by removing the trees and the grass in the first place, which is a matter of poor management of poor grazing practices. Your sheep and your goats and your cattle come in and they just strip everything because you leave them in one place for too long. And if the soil stripped, then the water runs off, it doesn't soak in, there is no compost being formed, and so it turns into a desert. So peas and beans, although you might think, Michelle, that they're just ordinary old vegetable crops, they're actually a possible saviour for the world.
And you know, I agree, Trevor, and you know, for even if we take aside the eating of the peas and beans, I would actually like to point out the harvesting of the peas and beans is actually this beautiful, it's almost like a mindful activity where you're sort of picking the beans and you put them in your basket, you slow down, and then you've got this basket full of wonderful produce.
Yeah, well, it takes a long time, actually. If you're getting a good crop, I mean, the best crop I ever had were something called Hawkesbury Wonders, and I planted them in summer, which I tried again this year, and it didn't work as well because my best crop ever, I planted them and the rain came.
Oh.
See, you're really not in control, but if you pop them in and then there's a beautiful rain afterwards, well, up they come like the whole world is there to celebrate. And they do, they really grow quick. I was in Jamaica in 1985, I think. Yeah, 1985.
Yeah, I was still in high school then. I just want to point that out.
and in Jamaica, which is a sort of, wow, it's a hell of a climate. They were harvesting beans 10 days after planting them.
Oh, my God.
And it takes us about, you know, best part of 3 months. So the world's a very different place in other places. But the thing about beans, and I've just said it really, is that everyone's companion and they're good for fixing nitrogen. Now, just a few other practical points. You only need to plant a packet of seed to supply a whole family. So the number of seed in a packet is easy enough to feed you. You just follow the instructions on how deep to plant them. But really, you plant them as deep as the seed is big. And you need an alkaline soil. So that's slightly unusual. There are other plants like the brassicas, which we're going to talk about sometime, but the cabbages and broccolis also need a slightly high pH, between 7 and 9, and so do onions. So you need that to make them grow. I've just given you instructions on how to grow them. It is best to keep the soil damp. They're not really a summer crop, although the beans are a summer crop, although, mind you, the beans are a European crop and they don't particularly like the heat, so you have to mulch them. You definitely have to have a cool root run. Exactly what's going to happen with them, as for always, is up in the air, but some of them are called climbing beans and others are dwarf beans. So, and some of them, probably the best of them, like Purple King and Gourmet, and one or two others, Blue Lake Epicure, you need to plant them on a trellis. There's a lot of them, like Hawkesbury Wonders, which is the ones I got my best ever crop on. that will grow on the ground, but they grow in a sort of bush-like area. And the trouble with beans, when you're talking about harvesting, the trouble with beans is that usually they're the same colour as the plant.
That is true, except for the Purple King.
Except for the Purple
which
King.
Which is actually, the Purple King's one of my favourites. Oh, and I loved it because when Samuel was little, my son was little, we'd grow the Purple King and we'd have these big purple beans and then you blanch them and they go green.
Yeah, that's right.
It was just like so amazing. Yeah. But they're actually my favourite personally, the Purple King. And honestly, blanch some beans.
Yep.
Toss them in olive oil, garlic, maybe some spring onion, but don't get too fancy. And then maybe some slivered almonds if you feel like it.
Yeah, mashed potatoes are beautiful with mashed potatoes.
You know what? Everything's beautiful with mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes are beautiful with mashed potatoes. But absolutely delicious. And you can have that as a huge bowl.
Mm.
And you've got all your proteins and stuff. Would that be right, Trevor? Would you think that? Yeah.
There are a lot of different sorts of beans. The most famous probably is soya bean, and it's got 26% protein, which is as much as you get from meat. So the soya bean, which grows here. Yep, I mean, absolutely. I've got it growing. Just pop them in, up they come. And you can go to places that sell them en masse. There are some market-like places that sell them in bags, and you just do a scoop of them in, and you get handfuls of them, you know?
Yeah, and chuck them in.
I'm not sure that's guaranteed, but they certainly grow. And same with broad beans.
Yeah.
And we are moving into a period now which is called winter. Here we don't get much of a winter, but much of the world, including Holland. And America and Europe and a lot of places, get snowed under. So they don't get winter crops like we get winter crops. And we can actually go berserk right now in that we can put broad beans in and we can put all the different sorts of peas in. I'm a fan of snow peas, but there's sugar snap peas and there's the one that they use for farming, which is a green feast, which has to be potted. But the other two, the snow pea and the sugar snap pea, you just cut them up, kernel and all, pot it all, and you just pop them in hot water for about 2 minutes and you've got yourself a beautiful meal.
The only problem I find with the snow peas, Trevor, I have to be really honest, is they don't make it to the kitchen. Yeah. Well, pick them and eat them. Oh, my God. And, you know, a handful for me, like, you know, I'm sitting at my desk at work. It's not, you know, a great job, but it's an inside job. And the other day I had just a beautiful handful of snow peas. And when you hit that 3 o'clock, oh, my God, I'm actually looking for the chocolate. Grab some really good organic snow peas, preferably homegrown, and you get that, you actually have that semi-sugar fix, which is what you're looking for, really, at about three-ish.
Yeah, I mean, if they're fresh, and let's face it, you know, there's something where you go out harvesting things in the wild called foraging. And there's peas and beans are likely to be subject to foraging, especially if the foragers are under the age of 7. So if you are a mother or father of young children, you'll notice the peas disappear off the plant quite often. So the other thing, well, we have mentioned that they're high in protein, so they are a really good substitute for meat. And the soya bean and the chickpeas and the bolotti beans and the kidney beans, they are famous food throughout the world, really. And I am talking world-changing because the Middle East, where a lot of the action in the world comes from, they know these things back to front. The chickpeas, for instance, are in both tahini and in
hummus.
Honestly,
I think hummus could be considered a whole food.
You reckon it might even
That's my opinion, not the nutritionist.
You reckon it might even compete with pesto, and I agree.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, hummus and anything.
Yeah, well, also, I mean, I did have a really good crop, and every second day I picked about 2 big colanders full of them. But the big thing about these peas and beans is that you can easily preserve them.
Yeah.
So you can put lots away in your freezer and you can enjoy them throughout the year. All you got to do is really just pour hot water on them. That's about all you got to do.
Yeah, don't overcook them.
No,
because
you'll cook them again.
You'll cook them again. No, exactly. Just parboil. My mum used to always, what'd she call it, blanch. So there'd be a pot boiling on the stove and then we'd blanch whatever she had in the garden and in the freezer they went. And then in the middle of winter you'd be But in the middle of summer, you'd be eating all these gorgeous winter vegetables and they'd be as fresh as, which is just gorgeous.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's not a lot to peas and beans. They are fairly easy to grow. You can certainly follow all your gross feeding crops by putting in a crop of peas or beans. Peas are basically winter crop and beans are basically a summer crop, but broad beans is the exception. That's a winter crop. You can leave off planting them right now. You can plant them on the shortest day of the year, which is June the 21st. So put it in your colander if you're going to do that. The reason being, although they'll grow...
Trevor meant calendar, not colander.
No, calendar, sorry.
But you can put them in your colander as well if you want to.
If you've got it, put them in your colander.
If you've got a colander, put them in your colander.
But so if you put them in now, people say they're useless because they don't actually produce peas or beans normally because the weather gets too cold for them to flower and set. But when it does come time in spring to grow, they've grown so much that they produce a lot more than the ones that are planted on the shortest day of the year. I suppose we should really mention the famous Irish sweet peas too. You can't eat them, but they are beautiful plants.
Well, I'm actually planting some this weekend. It's a little bit late because I had to work on
St. Patrick's Day.
But I've actually got my lovely handyman. I found a fabulous handyman. And he's moved the trellising against a fence for me. You'll be so impressed when you see it, Trevor. And I'm going to put my sweet peas against a very, very dull fence. And I'm actually really excited about how they're going to look. And you know, no, you can't eat them. But you can intersperse them with things. And that's good too. Sweet peas tend to grow really quickly, I've found.
They're beautiful, yeah. They are good growers. And, of course, we're always trying to attract the bees and the butterflies, aren't we?
And that's what's important, the bees and the butterflies. It's more important than ever.
It is, actually. So I reckon that might just about cover our main topic of the day.
Our main topic of the day.
Mm, but
we're going to
cover... How much time we got left?
We got a few more minutes, Trevor. I think some sage words. Right, pardon the pun.
Well, I did mention that peas and beans are being used to regenerate soil throughout the world. And this isn't Australian, it's not even me. It is worldwide in that people are getting worried that the coronavirus could possibly have been caused by the fact that we've ruined our old agricultural soil and now we're stripping the forest of Brazil and the Congo and other places which were mysterious before, but now they're being opened up and we don't know what's there, basically. And it could be things like future viruses are there. So it's probably smart for us all to think hard. And I'm pleased to say that on YouTube, there are a lot of people doing this, of turning poor soil back into good soil. Oh. And it's actually quite a regular thing. Now, I'll have to be fairly quick if you don't mind, but there are a few ideas on how to do this. One is called ecological grazing, which is a matter of fencing. Because in the good old days in Africa, the wildebeest and the gnus used to roam the Serengeti Plains in the hundreds of thousands. Everyone couldn't really work out why those grasslands stayed so good. And the reason was that they moved on. The grazing animals are meant to take the tops off of grass and not the roots.
Yeah.
So they kept moving. And if you do that on a 300-acre farm, instead of having four paddocks, you have 16 paddocks because you're using electrical fences and you're giving them water and you're moving them on each day. Well, then people who do this, what's called ecological grazing, are managing their stock so that the ground gets lots of rest and the cover stays in place and there's no erosion, and so the soil gets better and better because these movable animals are leaving droppings behind. It's a bit like we do with our chooks in that we keep moving them on.
Keep moving. If you want to clean an area, you don't leave them to destroy the area, you just leave them to tidy up the weeds and clean it up.
And then move them
on. Cover it, move it on. Exactly.
So that's one. It's called ecological grazing. It's basically fencing. There's another good one. In the old days when beavers were everywhere in Canada and other places, they used to make dams, but these were leaky dams. They're called leaky weirs. And a bloke in Canberra has come up with a whole system of taking rivers and creeks and putting these leaky dams in. They hold the water back to a certain extent. And that means that the water is held upstream for a long while rather than going straight down into the ocean, and that makes all the difference to the surrounding countryside because they've got a bit of irrigation and a bit of water, and that water slowly seeps down the river and does eventually, I suppose, reach the outside. But in the meantime, it has done a lot, and you'll find that the fish and the frogs and the damp soil and the dragonflies and the grubs and the worms and the birds all come back, and that might not seem like much, but in fact, all those things are fertility.
Absolutely. You know? Oh, no.
So, I mean, those, when you go to YouTube and you start looking up natural sequence, ecological grazing and permaculture, you'll find that there are people who have done it.
Only go to YouTube after you've listened to our podcast.
Well, there's also one in Africa where this bloke planted, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of trees, and the way he did it was with a medic. He just dug a hole and he put the soil on the downslope, and then he added a handful of compost and he planted a plant and he watered it in, and he did it before the rainy season, which is about now, by the way, and up came this plant. So you go from nothing into a landscape that holds the water, stops the flow of it downhill and has a plant in it, and that plant grows, and all around that hole the grass grows and it all dies off and it all adds organic matter to the soil, and before you know it, that hillside, and this hasn't occurred once, this has occurred in New Zealand on the little Christchurch Peninsula there, it occurred all over the place. You know my wife, she's got a saying that is memorable. And that
she
is,
has many sayings that are
very... And what she says is there's no such thing as soil.
Oh.
It's just grass seed that looks like soil. And so...
I haven't heard that one.
That is true. Because many of the people doing these types of things, slowing down the flow of the water out to sea, find that you don't have to plant anything.
No.
It comes up itself. And it's true of the... Highlands of Scotland are not considered a desert, but in fact they used to have the world-famous Caledonian forest, and that was 30-metre-high trees everywhere, but now they're bare hills.
Oh,
well, there's
really?
A bloke there who's just fencing them off, getting rid of the grazing animals, doing it in the right time, doing a bit of contouring, and the Caledonian forest is coming back. So this is all good news to us. Not only is it giving us a chance to reclaim soil, which is very important because we are pushing the limits of the unknown forests and so forth. I mean, you've got to admit that Germany, for instance, had one of the biggest forests in the world. It had bears and had all sorts inside the Black Forest, but they were afraid of it. They foresaw themselves as the enemy of nature, as nature was their enemy, and they fought it.
Mm.
Well, one of the things we got to learn is that really we made a mistake there.
We have made a huge mistake.
So those forests, they're also helping with the supposed climate change caused by humans. That is, they are sequestering carbon into the soil. And all that we talked about, all the permaculture, all the biological farming and gardening, it's all looking to get that organic matter back into the soil to get deep-rooting plants, which improves the drought tolerance, brings the worms, which once again improves the drainage. And it's a long story that you know very well. It's also a story that is tied up with peas and beans. Even though they might be the world's best companion, they're actually pretty good on their own, you know.
That was an excellent segue to peas and beans, Trevor. I'm very impressed. And the thing is, too, and I think, Trevor, my place is a bit of an example of that. It doesn't take long to rejuvenate the soil, does it? My soil, when I moved in, was really not great.
Yeah, you were
great.
Good at that, though.
It wasn't great. And then you just got to keep piling stuff into it, keep planting. And it is now. It's really very good soil.
Yeah, well, I did notice that you instantly gathered other people's manures and mulch and stuff, which they were glad to get rid of, but you weren't that foolish.
No.
So you put it into the soil, and I've done the same here too. I've done 9 loads of compost last year, and by God, it changes the soil.
It does. And just feed, a bit like us, when we're fed, Trevor, we feel better.
And also, it retains moisture. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
It is a good sponge.
It is. As if you go to our podcast on mulching, has completely changed the way I mulch, that's for sure. Microgreens.
Next week.
Yeah, next week we're going to do microgreens. Excellent, because I'll be growing some. Okay, so look, in these really challenging times, it's really important to remember that there are positives that can come out of these sorts of things. And if nothing else, just go and sit in the garden for a little while and kind of get back to nature. Take your shoes off and, you know, rub your feet in the soil or the grass and remain grounded.
I was also going to say a good word for silence. Silence is one of the reasons we like gardening, and it surprisingly is so we can hear the other things. You know, you get rid of the noise of the traffic and the plane flying overhead and all the TVs and that, and you go into a silent area where you can actually hear the birds. And I think, just like patience, silence is one of those things that is an abstract of gardening, but is a thing that, well, you were just talking about, the meditation is only possible where you have silence and the world and the rush has all stopped. So, that hasn't got a segue, has it?
No, it hasn't got a segue, but I totally agree with you, Trevor. Very few people pipe music through their garden the whole time. Some people do, but I agree. And I love just sitting there and listening, and that's a huge meditative thing as well. And that's what we need. So grow some peas, grow some beans. We want to hear from people about their broad beans and their beans. And next month we're going to be talking, I think we need to talk a little bit more about silence in the garden.
Okay.
All right. But we're also going to be talking more about the microgreens and regeneration.
Well,
what to plant?
Yeah, what to plant. I mean, midwinter, you've got to think of the annual crops, the strawberries, the asparagus, the rhubarb.
Oh, rhubarb, yep.
And the artichokes. So those four are planted in winter. They're about all that you have to do in winter, really. Once you get over this period of autumn, which has still got 2 months to run, I think.
Yeah, we're barely in it, right?
Yeah, so there's still all that massive number of plantings that I started out with. So you can plant a lot of things now, and I do recommend it because rain will come. But next month, I think we'll try and talk about the permanent crops of the vegetable world.
Oh, I like that idea. So, we'll see you next month, Trevor.
Yeah, I'll see you next month, Michelle.